The second example is what people think of with the courtly romance period of Arthurian legend, and this is where the focus is less the battlefield, less the wars that the knights leave the castle to fight, and more what goes on at home, what happens within the court. There was the idea of courtly love that a knight could take a lady, often a lady married to some other nobleman, and dedicate his entire knightly activities to her. And this, I think this is fair to say, very strange code of chivalry about what was and was not permitted between them. But without spending too much time there, the point was that it ultimately became corrupt. Mm-hmm. And the most classic example of that is Lancelot and Guinevere, which ultimately ends up tearing apart the Fellowship of the Round Table. So Lancelot is Arthur's best knight and his right-hand man, and he begins this courtly love with Arthur's wife, which becomes adulterous and ultimately destroys the fellowship at its heart. That's the second period, and later authors realized that it had gotten away from its roots and that its characters were no longer virtuous. And so the third period brings in a younger generation of knights, and this is where you see the quest for the Holy Grail come into play. Questing becomes the big activity now. So once again, the knights are shooed out of the castle, so to speak, sent back out into the world, given a purpose that doesn't involve them taking their ease in the castle. That was part of the problem. The knights weren't being knights. But now, instead of fighting large wars, they're on quest for something. Mm-hmm. And this mm-hmm. includes the story of Sir Gawain and the Green Knight. But the most famous example, as I said, is the quest for the Holy Grail, which is, of course, an item that has obvious spiritual connotations just because of its history. And the quest for the Holy Grail is a quest for purity. It's Sir Galahad, who's the most pure of all the knights, who accomplishes the quest. And it's precisely because of his purity that he's the one who's given to see the Grail. When all of the others, they catch a glimpse of it, but they're forced to turn back. And it's there's an episode where it's their sins are actually recollected to them as they see the Grail. And they all have this preternatural understanding that this is as far as I'll see it, because these sins which are presented to me are holding me back from a closer experience of it.
This is in the Chapel Perilous, where they each go into the Chapel Perilous. They're awakened during the night. Lancelot, and each of them is shown his own vices and virtues.
Yes.
So you and I have both recently read Charles Colomb's book on the Arthurian legends called The Catholic Quest for the Holy Grail. And you'll probably remember the part towards the end where he compares the Chapel Perilous to the confessional, which I thought was a great sort of way to take a beautiful figure from literature and translate it into our own life, that we enter into the Chapel Perilous to see our virtues and vices displayed before us so that we can know whether we're worthy to continue this particular quest or not.
Yes, and that's the defining feature of that third period of Arthurian legend, is that the quest now has, as you said, there's a spiritual element to it. There's what they're doing in terms of where they go and the challenges that they face and whether they succeed or not, all either explicitly depends on the state of their soul, or, like in the case of the Chapel Perilous, has some allegorical application to our own Christian life.
So just to recapitulate, you're talking about three distinct chronological phases of the Arthurian lore, because there are multiple authors who contributed to the Arthurian lore, and you're saying that the earliest stuff was all about martial adventure, military stuff, crusading and things like that, and fighting and occasional tournaments between the different knights. The second phase goes into this sort of decadent kind of courtly love phase, and then the third goes as you said, they're shooed out of the castle, and they go out to do more knightly things. Only this time, it's elevated to something higher, this spiritual quest for the Holy Grail. So, but and by the way, to the audience who hasn't read Charles Colomb's book on the subject, it's highly recommended, and I will definitely link to it from the show details page for this show. Did you have anything else? We're about halfway through, so do you have anything else that you wanted to cover on temperance before we go on?
No, I think that covers it.
Okay, well, we're temperate in all things, including talking about temperance, I guess. So now we move on to fortitude, a.k.a. bravery and courage. So do you have a pagan example of fortitude?
I do, and it's once again Odysseus. You could find examples, I think, in most of the classical heroes of fortitude, because one of the distinguishing features of a hero in Greek mythology was that they encountered obstacles and performed feats that other men would not be able to do. Mm-hmm. And those would necessarily involve an element of danger, and fortitude is what allows you to do something despite the possibility of suffering in it for yourself, because your intellect recognizes that it's worthy of doing regardless.
St. Thomas says it pertains to the arduous and difficult. Mm. So it's not easy. You can't be you don't have fortitude when you play a video game or when you cheer on the hero in a movie.
No.